GAA on Off the Ball.
All right, Conor McManus is with us in studio today, and he's been helping to launch AIB's Battle Mode, which is the addition to the Toughest Journey video game, previously restricted to playing as a single user. Players can now choose to wear their county colours with pride to take on inter-county rivals in real time. Check out AIB's game, The Toughest Journey, at thetoughestjourneygame.com. I played it. I'm not very good at it. No, it's a bit tricky.
I'm not great at it either. I got beat. Sarah Rowe beat me, so I can't really sit here and say that I'm good at it. But no, it's an enjoyable wee game, like, and you know, it's definitely something kids can get onto, and even grown-ups.
Yeah, it turns out we're the ones. I think we're the target market for it. It's like, let the kids play and then actually steal it from them.
It's a way of getting an avenue of getting to Grow Park, and obviously we didn't get there this year, so I might try my best with it.
Yeah, speaking of which, what happened this year? What happened? Why was this not the same online team that we've come to know and love over the last few years?
It's hard to put your finger on it, to be honest with you. It's probably a lot of small things more than one thing you could say that went wrong. You know, we had a number of injuries throughout the league, and a couple of injuries coming into the championship and things like that. I suppose we had a good start to the league. We beat Dublin, and then in a game where you were expected to win the following day out, you go down to Roscommon, which is always a hard place to go anyway, you know. But we end up losing that game, and then you lose your following game at home, and all of a sudden you're chasing points and you're chasing safety in the league, and we just seemed to carry that momentum on with us throughout the whole year.
The negative momentum.
Yeah, it just seemed to, like, and the more you try and tell yourself that things are going well and that you can turn it around, and the more you try, nearly the worst things got for us, you know.
Was it any kind of a hangover from the previous seasons at all?
I wouldn't say that, no, like, because at the end of the day, like, the previous season we didn't actually win anything, you know what I mean? It'd be different if you had won an Ulster title or if you'd gone on to an All-Ireland final or whatever the case, but we hadn't achieved anything that we really wanted to, so you couldn't say that it was a hangover from any success or anything like that there, because you didn't have any, you know?
Yeah, sometimes failure can lead to hangovers too, though, just this kind of sense of how close we've been to something magical.
I think the idea there was that was going to drive us on even further than anything else. You know, we had, you know, broken that ceiling that we had been told that we couldn't get through quarterfinals and things like that there, and probably didn't perform overly well in a semi-final, yet could have been in an All-Ireland final. So to that end, I don't think it was more, you know, we've got here, now we want to get back. That was, you know, and just never happened for us, you know.
Yeah. Malachy obviously stepped away at the end of the year. I don't think anybody was surprised that he stepped away, and yet when you look at the body of work that he's put together, it's as good as any manager has done given the size of the county, right?
And yeah, he's been brilliant for Monaghan football. You know, Malachy came in 2012, at the end of 2012. We'd just been relegated to Division 3, you know, so it was probably as far as Monaghan could have went, you know, because there was still a panel of players there that you would have felt that was more than competitive if you got things right. So it was probably as far down as Monaghan were going to go. So we probably had hit rock bottom at that stage. And Malachy came in and I suppose got us into a habit of winning, and just got a culture of winning games and a, you know, a more confident, positive dressing room, you know, from the previous few years. So he'd been brilliant with us. A couple of Ulster titles, obviously won one in 2013, and successive promotions from Division 3 to 2 and 2 to 1, and we've been in Division 1 since. So, you know, Malachy owes Monaghan nothing, you know, there's no doubt about that, and he's going to be a loss to Monaghan football, there's no doubt about that either.
What is the legacy from that level of sustained playing in Division 1, beyond the expectations that your supporters have and that you guys have, that you're a team who should be at the top table, like, in terms of style of play, in terms of belief, in terms of the philosophy on the game, is that there? Is that embedded now for whoever comes next?
I think it is, yeah. And like, to be fair to Malachy, like, during the 7 years that he was there, we've picked up a couple of Ulster minor titles, maybe three Ulster minor titles in them 7 years that Malachy was there, and Ulster under 21 titles. So there has been very good work going on in the background to that, and you know, the foundations are there for Monaghan football, hopefully for the next 5 to 10, 15 years, you know. There's a lot of good work going on at development level. And you would hope now that it's just whoever comes in is going to continue what Malachy has done and hopefully try and improve on it and build on it, you know.
When you second team what he's done, like, I'll take for granted that everybody who is in the running for that job and who gets that job is going to continue to have the elite level strength and conditioning that you guys have clearly had. In terms of a style of play, does that need to evolve at all? Do you need to look at what other counties are doing and start to match up to them?
Or? Yeah, well, I think like if you're in Croke Park 2 weeks ago at the Kerry Donegal game, for example, like we played Kerry in the quarter final in the same stage last year and it finished 1-17 each in Clonus. That game between Donegal and Kerry finished 1-20 each, and I think they're the levels that you have to get to in terms of what you're going to score if you're going to go on ahead and ultimately be successful in Croke Park in the bigger games, in the semi-finals and the finals in the All-Ireland series.
Yeah,
you need to be fit to come to Croke Park and tag on scores like that, you know. But then on the flip side of that, you need to probably keep it tighter at the back then.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing is that you actually think that this year was just a blip. Mm. That actually the Monaghan side who went toe-to-toe with that Kerry team is as prepared as the Donegal team who've just gone toe-to-toe with them. But you just had a down year for a bunch
of
different reasons.
Well, look, the proof will be in the pudding next year, I suppose. But you would certainly feel that because, you know, we're probably not going to lose too many players. You might have maybe one or two of the older, you know, boys that are 35, 36, 7 that may step away. But after that, then you're down to an age group of players where, you know, myself and Darren Hughes and Drew Wiley are just gone past 30, 31. And after that, then you're into the likes of Colin Walsh, Fintan Kelly, Kieran Duffy. You know, them lads are all 28, 29. And then below that, you have a good core of players at 23, 24, 25. So there's a good mix there. And I think it's just about harnessing that again and getting back on the horse, really.
Just won the last two minor titles as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Banty was involved in that.
He was involved in one of them and he was with the under-20s this year. So, like as I say, there is good work going on there and, you know, Monaghan football is in a decent place. And it's disappointing the way the year went this year, particularly after, you know, getting to a semi-final and hoping that you were going to go on ahead. But, you know, I don't think you can be too despondent about it. I think there's reason for optimism.
What about your own game? Obviously, to stay at the elite level that you've been at for the last 5-6 years, even longer at this stage, you need to evolve, you need to change. The game itself has changed. How is your game evolving?
Yeah, I suppose it evolves with the game and you know, it's probably becoming a wee bit more open now for inside forwards probably than what it had been in previous years. And, you know, in previous years when defensive systems and, you know, sweepers and double sweepers and all that there was in, you had to nearly think your way through a game a wee bit more and you know, even before the game started, you need to be thinking about where you were going to go or what you were going to do in certain circumstances and trying not to allow yourself drift through a game without having an impact in it, you know. So that has evolved a wee bit more now, I think.
When did you first notice that you weren't being double teamed as often?
Well, it still does happen. Like there is still, but it's not as out and out defensive as it was, you know.
Yeah.
So that there's a wee bit more off the cuff football, I suppose, to be played. You know, for example, the Kerry game last year in Clonus, like Kerry will go out and they'll play you man for man. They'll put up 116, 117, 118 on the board, and they'll not to say that they'll allow you to do that at the other end, but they're not as defensive minded as other teams. And I think when you get to the elite sort of top 4, 5, 6 teams in the country, that's the kind of football they're all playing, because that's, in order to win, that's what you have to be fit to do, is go and post big scores.
So that sea change in opinion happened, and everybody got the memo except Tyrone. Although even they seem to have got the memo for a little bit, and they've kind of gone back now to a very defensive style.
Yeah, well, it's serving them well at the minute anyway, and we'll see how that develops over the next week or 10 days, you know.
That Kerry game was wild. I didn't get a chance to talk to anybody who's played in that game since, but at one stage you were on the end of a through ball from Rory Beggan from a kick-out.
Yeah, that's probably tells two stories, I suppose. It showed how much Kerry had pressed our kick out, you know, and again, it's a bit, the tactics have, like, 4 or 5 years ago, teams were conceding kick outs, you know what I mean? Now it's about squeezing kick outs and trying to get as much possession from the opposition kick out as you possibly can. And Kerry done that, you know, quite aggressively against us that day. And then also, it tells a story that Rory can really kick the ball quite long. But yeah, it was a good game, and funny, it's not a game I've watched back, you know, before, but, you know, anybody that you'd ever talk to since that, they'd always reference that game has been a really good game. But look, Kerry have been involved in them games year after year, you know what I mean, and they were involved in another one in Croke Park there 2 weeks ago, you know.
Yeah, are you watching that game going, ah, shite, we should be in this?
Well, yeah, I was actually at Croke Park that day, and you know, you see the teams warming up and you see them coming running out onto the field and things, and you're thinking, right, that's where you need to be. Like, you can be sitting in a stand or you can be sitting in a studio talking about it, whatever the case is, but ultimately as a player, there's no substitute for being on the field, you know.
I know you're talking about you're in that tier of players who are 30, 31. Like, there's only 5 or 6 more years at most that you'll be able to continue doing that. Does that, like, I don't know if you have a figure in your head that you're kind of thinking, okay, well, that's my cutoff point. And if you don't, happy days. But those opportunities, like, next year when you're in the huddle before the first round of the Ulster Championship, you don't know that it's going to be another 10 years of that. Mm.
No, and that's probably something that maybe would come into your thinking in the last, you know, even just this year. Now, I have no figure in my head either, and, you know, you'll always play for as long as your body allows you to play and that you're picked, and I suppose that's the most important thing. But, yeah, it's not something that you would have ever thought about before that, because you're just playing in the moment and everything else. But when you start to see some of the boys that you've been playing with for 8, 9, 10 years starting to step away, you're starting to think, well, this is coming my way some of these years now. Again, as you say, you're putting no time frame on it, but that's the reality, you know.
You've obviously always been a leader in terms of how you play off the field and training and all that kind of stuff. Do you feel like you've had to embrace that role a bit more as the younger kids are coming through? Is that natural for you?
Yeah, well, I suppose that was it. And when Malachy came in 7 years ago, he made me vice-captain of the team. Owen Lennon was then the captain at the time. And then the following year I was captain for 3 or 4 years or whatever it was. So you probably got a gradual lead into it, you know, that particular year. It's not something you would have thought about at the time whenever he came in, you know, am I one of the leaders here now, or am I going to be, he put me in that position, and then you just grow into it, you know, and that's, you just take that on from then, you know.
You had played your final season before Malachy came in at left half back, is that right?
No, to be fair.
You'd already moved.
I'd made the move. Banty had moved me up to the full forward line in 2010 in his last year.
Okay.
The previous 3 years I had been playing wing back, wing forward. Yeah. But up to that I was back there, and then Banty, and then Ian McEnany when he was in for his 2 years, I was inside then.
Okay. All right. Had you played club in the half back line, or was it?
Yeah. Well, funny, I actually started in the half back line with the club in 2005, 2006 or whatever it was. Probably hadn't just developed physically, you know, enough to be in the inside line or whatever it was, winning your own ball and taking men on. So when you're in the half back line, you come on the end of plays and you know, sneak up the side and things like that. There wasn't as many blankets and things floating about. So and it just transitioned from there, really. I got called into the senior team on the back of club performances. We were lucky enough to win a couple of championships back then with Clontibret, and was called in on the back of that, and suppose that it evolved from then, you know.
And who decided that you were a corner forward then? Is that what you wanted to play?
Yeah, well, I suppose that's what I would have played when I was younger, you know, growing up and whatnot.
Full forward,
you know, corner forward, that type of a role in juvenile teams growing up. But it was just back in the club, and sort of in 2008-09 I sort of drifted from closer towards the goals, you know, and then it went inside, I think, maybe in 2009, and sort of haven't really come out since.
When did you get good at the county level?
I suppose you're starting to see sprouts of it in around 10, 11, 12, but, you know, it was ultimately in 13 when I suppose I felt that I made my mark in it, really, you know, and you felt that you were playing close to you, what you felt you could play, you know, that sort of way.
Yeah.
Those flashes of it, you know, over the previous couple of years, but you never really consistently put it together on bigger days and things like that there, and you always felt that it could be there, but...
What happened to get you into the vein where you could be consistent?
I suppose it was just a case of hard work, you know, and it wasn't... Like, Malachy came in to us in at the end of 2012, and it's never as if he sat you down and says, look, this is what we want you to do. It was just a case that they said, look, just work as hard as you can. I suppose physically I probably developed a wee bit more and got a bit physically stronger, and, you know, we were probably able for that rough and tumble inside, you know, that you're going to get. And it just sort of evolved from there. You know, you put your head down and you worked hard, and I suppose the league football and playing regularly, you know, in the National League and getting them games under your belt and starting to tag up scores and things like that. And when you're doing that week in, week out, regardless of what league it's in or what division it's in, you start to garner a bit of confidence from that,
yeah.
And you carry that into the summer, and then when you do it on the bigger days in the Championship football, and then you just, it sort of feeds on from there, you know.
Yeah, and that's base camp then for what you see as your level. I did want to talk to you about the art of corner forward play, like, notwithstanding the fact that there's room for a bit more off the cuff football. We were talking about this recently, and somebody quoted you, actually. They said that you don't care what type of ball, if it's high or low, so long as it's early. Just get the ball into me. I don't know if you actually did say that or if that was
I'm not too sure that it did either, but it does sound like, you know,
something you would say.
You would, you know, just as long as it's going in, you know, I suppose the way football went there for a few years, the first reaction of players, and not just in our team, but just the way football was in general, the first reaction was to nearly to solo it or to fist it sideways, because you were actively encouraged probably not to kick it, because you're only kicking it to down the sweeper's throat. You know. So football became a wee bit more methodical in how you break teams down, and less off the cuff, as you said. But when the opportunity is there, sometimes players in all teams, it's looking up and checking to see is it on doesn't even become an option. You know, it's just we were for years there in beating sweepers and blankets, you were programmed to go sideways, and even to get the chin up to look to see what was there, you know, maybe wasn't an option at times. You know,
so shoot on sight, or shoot even like know where you are in the pitch when you get the ball. Shoot, is that the
not even playing from deep? You know, coming from the half back line or midfield or whatever the case is.
Right.
You know,
don't even look, because you're not going to have time. You get swallowed up. Just get rid of it.
Yeah, yeah. And what the tendency was to run it. You know, rather than look up to see if something was on, because there was two or three sweepers there. 9 times out of 10, it wasn't the right option.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And if you're a corner forward, making that run, and it's never coming because your teammates aren't looking up.
Yeah.
A bit frustrating,
It can be. But again, that's just the way football went. It wasn't like the Monaghan team was no different to the Mayo team or the Kerry team or the Donegal team.
Yeah.
It was just how it was. So you had to figure your way out and figure your way around it, you know.
Yeah. How did you do that, and when did, so that changes, like 16 around that time, is it 3 years ago that started to change, when
that
the player started to look up and try?
Yeah, well, I suppose it came with, I suppose, the more attacking teams winning again, you know what I mean. I suppose Donegal brought a certain type of football to the country, and were successful at it and were very good at it, and it was up to teams to figure out how to beat it, you know. And it took a while for that to happen, and it took a lot of time and a lot of coaching and in figuring out ways around it. But now look at Donegal themselves, they're probably one of the best attacking teams in the country at the minute, you know. They're racking up huge scores every day they go out, so they have openly changed their way of playing as well, you know. So it's not just within Monaghan, but it's countrywide that has changed, and probably because Dublin are so dominant, that has forced everybody's hand, you know.
And so over the last 12 months, or kind of even the last two seasons, really, did your role change? Was there more freedom for you? And how did you get that? How did the ball get delivered to you to make sure that you're maximising whatever?
Yeah, well, I suppose there's probably more of an emphasis on keeping one or two up, you know, at all times, rather than, you know, dropping back. Yes, you have to drop back and do your defensive duties and things like that, but keeping a presence in the forward line, one or two.
So don't be coming back to the full back line here. Yeah.
There's times when you have no choice, you know, when your man goes or whatever the case is, you can't let him run, you know. But it's getting a balance between keeping things tight at the back and also being a threat up front. And that, like, I go back to that. If you go to the later stages of the Championship, you need to be fit to you know, rack up 115, 116, 117.
Yeah.
Because if you're not doing that, you're not going to win.
And so when you're one of the two people who are up front for Monaghan, is that just about making runs and making sure you're available for an outlet? So if an early ball is coming, that at least, if it is 50-50, it's kind of, you can try and make it 55-45.
You're an option for to be a launch pad for the rest of the team, you know. Even if you're only winning it, at least there's something there to hold the play up and get other lads involved and you know, move your way up the field rather than being penned in the whole time, you know.
So your own game hasn't really changed that much. It's like you still want to try and create as many one-on-ones as you possibly can.
Absolutely, that hasn't changed, you know. But I suppose the option to do that is more now than maybe it has been in the previous 4, 5, 6 years.
You know? Yeah, so it sounds like you're enjoying playing intercounty football more now even than you were 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, well,
it's a better game to play.
It probably has. It has changed. There's openly more of an emphasis on attacking than there is defending. Like the time was, you'd go out and defend your way to a win.
Yeah,
that's the way it was. But again, that system has come and gone now, and teams are looking to hurt you on the other end more so now.
The Dublin-Tyrone game, the build-up to it has been entirely overshadowed by this debate about who should play their strongest team and why. Where do you stand? Should both teams play a strong team? Should both teams not play strong teams? They're both already through.
Both there, and they're both playing in a semi-final the following week.
In 6 days' time.
Yeah. Which in itself is probably unfair. But it's a tricky one. I was saying earlier, if there is a time for Dublin to lose a championship game, this is the one to lose, because it's not going to have a major effect on their All-Ireland campaign. They're in a semi-final the following week. It's probably a chance for them to try out a few players that they want to know a bit about.
Yeah.
Do they do that? Do they take their foot off the gas? It's very hard to... Teams don't actively go out to lose championship games. It doesn't happen. But with a semi-final coming in 6 days' time, it's a tricky one.
It is, because we've never had these type of championship games before where they are, in
both
this case,
true.
Completely meaningless.
Yeah,
really.
Both true. Like even last year, I know we went down to Salt Hill on the last day, but Galway were through, but we weren't.
Yeah.
You know, and we were all out.
You steamrolled them, really,
yeah,
in the end.
But again, it's tricky for Galway. They were through. But again, on the day, they definitely didn't take a step back, you know, and allow us to, because there was plenty of aggression and physicality in that game, and the way Galway played, there was no way that they had decided they're going to take a step, because they put out a full team, you know.
Yeah.
If they were going to do that, they probably would have rested their players and got ready for a semi-final, knowing that they're going to be in it. But it's a tricky one, and as you say, we've never been in this scenario whereby both teams are through on the same playing the same day.
What about Mayo and Donegal? Who's going to go through?
That's a tricky one. Like Mayo at home in Castlebar, very hard place to go to get a result.
The record's not great.
No, it's not. But it's still a very difficult place to go. Like if you go down there and turn Mayo over, you have a damn good day's work over.
Yeah, and in fairness, again, we haven't had one of these games in Castlebar where it's do or die for
exactly.
A place
and
in the
semi-final. That's
so.
Like you're probably getting both ends of the spectrum here in the Super 8. You're getting one of the games that's not meaningless, but it's a bit of a dead rubber.
Yeah.
And you get another one where it's do or die
on
another
line.
Thing, you know. So it is throwing up the beauty of the Super 8s now this weekend. Mayo probably haven't been going along as well as they would like, but they're there. They're in a position. If somebody had told Mayo 6 weeks ago that
to win this game and you're through.
Last game of the Super 8s in Castlebar,
they'd take it
yeah. All day long. And they've 2 weeks to get ready for it.
So who do you think is actually gonna win?
If the word on Donegal's injuries are true, if they're missing the likes of Neil McGee, Paddy McGrath, obviously Owen Bann Gallagher's missing, there's word on Paddy McBrearty as well, struggling. If that is true,
that's too much.
It swings it back in Mayo's favour. If they're playing, it's a really tight game to call. I do honestly see it possibly being a draw and Donegal going through on a draw. But if the injuries are there, I think Mayo have a serious chance.
That would be some outcome, all right. The word is that it's going to be Banty and Rory as a dream team. What's the WhatsApp group saying about that?
Yeah, it's the WhatsApp group's very quiet at the minute, actually. Not much happening in the WhatsApp group at the minute. Look, there's a couple of names out there at the minute. I suppose from a player's point of view, all we can do is let the county board do the thing. Like they had spoken to a couple of the players, all right, and just said, look, we're going to try and get the best that we possibly can, and we'll take it from there, you know. But up to that point, that's pretty much where our involvement in it has stopped. There's been no real communication with them. I suppose it's a club delegates thing, and they nominate their men or whatever, and it's up to them to take it on from there.
In fairness, as county boards go, Monaghan is like probably the best in the country. The way they organise football, the way they've managed to get the best out of their resources, I guess you guys have trust in them?
There's no doubt. Like the guys in the Monaghan County Board, Michael O'McMahon and his team there have been brilliant. You know, Pádraig Sherry was there before him, and them guys have been very easy to work with from a player's point of view. And it's not that players would have a massive dealings with county boards and shouldn't really have, But in any dealings that we've ever had with them, you know, they've been more than good to us, you know, and they try and fight the players' corner at all times, you know, and you can't ask for any more than that.
No, absolutely. Conor, enjoy the games this weekend. Thanks very much for joining us.
All the best.
Conor's with us to help launch AIB's Battle Mode addition to the Toughest Journey video game. Previously restricted to playing as a single user, you can now choose to wear your county colours with pride to take on inter-county rivals in real time. Check out AIB's game, The Toughest Journey, at thetoughestjourneygame.com.
GAA on Off the Ball.